Welcome to another episode of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Today we are discussing special situations, and we are joined by Xavier Women's Head Coach Melanie Moore and Head Coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, J.B. Bickerstaff.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Junior NBA Coaches Corner alongside the one and only Monica McNutt. I'm Dallin Cuff. Mon, today we're talking special situations. As a player, did you like drilling special situations?
I did, because they were short. They were cool drills. And then, I don't know, I'd be curious when we talk with our coaches, how often do they actually get implemented? Like, I remember one that we practiced that we kind of used one time, and it was basically just get the rebound and put the ball back. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I liked special situations because it was always end of game, most times for me, end of game situations. And yeah, they were short and they were competitive. And when we lost, we ran. So I didn't enjoy that too much. So they were fun, though. So let's bring in our crew right now. I'll actually dive into them a little more. As a player, she's been inducted into the Hall of Fame at both Siena College and the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference. She served as assistant coach at Siena as well as Indiana State, Dayton, Princeton, and Michigan. She is now the head coach at Xavier. Let's welcome in Melanie Moore. And our other guest, he played his college ball at Oregon State before playing for the Gophers at Minnesota, where he also began his coaching career. He was the youngest assistant coach in the NBA at the age of 24. He's coached the T-Wolves, the Grizzlies, and the Houston Rockets. He is now the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, J.B. Bickerstaff. Thank you guys so much for joining us, guys. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just start kind of where Mon and I were just like, let's start with how do you define special situations? Let's start with that, JB, in terms of how you define special situations with your staff and then how you communicate that and teach that to your players. But how do you define it?
I think it's all the small moments that can impact a game. You know, it's small things from free throw line blockouts to 2-for-1 situations, end of game or low clock baseline and sideline out of bounds. Jump ball. So I think it's all the small things that we pay a ton of attention to that can have a big impact on the game.
Melanie, how would you define it?
I agree with JB. It's all like the dead balls. It's like he said, the jump ball, blobs, slobs. And a lot of times most people think it's just at the end of the game, low shot clock, but it's from the very start of the game, the tip, who starts on offense, who starts on defense, that all of that stuff matter.
It's so funny, Mel, because I remember in the NCAA tournament, one of the special situations I remember was just how we rearranged the tip. They had me play for the tip. I wasn't going to get it, but it set us right up into our defense. Like, and I just remember that being super innovative, and we were so energetic, and we did go on to win that game. Shout out to my whole team. All right, so then what becomes the key to teaching special situations? Like, even as players, the first thing you think of is games on the line at the end of the game. But you guys clearly have spent so much more detail defining what that is, Coach Moore. So how do you begin teaching that?
Yeah, and it starts in practice, and you have to drill it, right? So we drill the tip almost every practice. We work on, okay, this team is Xavier, this team is an opponent, and we work on the tip. We work on special situations from an offense defense. So our offense might be a blob, and it's late shot clock. Now you got to get back and you got to get a stop. We just scored. Nobody has timeouts, things like that. So you have to drill it, and you have to have your kids understand each scenario. What's the score? How many fouls? How many timeouts? Who's in foul trouble on our team? So you try to teach it and implement it every day, so it's not something that just happens in a game and they've never seen it before. So you try to work on it and drill it as much as you can.
I think, Monica, you used the word in the question is details. And it's all the small things that make the difference, right? It's about the execution. It's, do you set the screen the right way? Or is the team switching and now you slip the screen instead of actually setting the screen? You know, it's all those small things that I don't think you can afford to miss, that your team, you know, has to understand that's the difference between, you know, the guy getting through the screen or not and creating a shot for your teammate, or, you know, the old school jump ball play where you set that back screen after you know you're going to win the tip. And now you hit the guy who, you know, who won the jump ball. You know, there's all those small things that I think are the most important part. And you got to start teaching it from day one. You can't just show up in the fourth quarter of a game and be like, hey, we're getting ready to do this now. I hope you guys can figure it out. So, you know, we start in training camp and try to do it as much as we can so guys have a really good understanding of what we're trying to get done.
You guys are obviously both coaching at a high level in the NBA and in college, but you've mentioned twice now, both your answers, JB, attention to detail, the small things. How would you suggest, how do you teach this and make sure to emphasize the details? How do you make sure that your team understands that, especially grassroots players and younger players, that the little things mean big things? How do you communicate that?
Well, I think it's important to teach. You don't skip steps. And even as, you know, you're coaching young kids and you're teaching the fundamentals of the game, there's a baseline for everybody and there's a beginning. And once you start at the beginning, you take the next proper steps. I think where we all get caught up as coaches and where we get in trouble is when we do skip steps, because at some point in time during the season, it's going to come back where that scenario or that situation that we skipped, you know, is going to be there. And now our guys don't know exactly what to do. So when you're working with young kids in particular and you're teaching the fundamentals, like understanding how to be coached starts at the junior level, right? And if you're coaching those kids, you're teaching them the right way. You're teaching them the proper steps so that by the time they get to college or the NBA, they understand how to be coached and how to listen and learn through those while they're being coached as well.
I love that. I mean, it starts at the grassroots level. But then let me piggyback there, JB, because even within these special situations, you've got players that you trust who are high basketball IQ folks, instinctual to a degree. So where I think your answer may be that part of the ability to trust their instinct also comes from the faith and the trust and the diligence with which we've studied and mastered the details. Because I imagine that there are occasions where special situations, we drew it up this way, that's a terrible shot, that's a good shot, congrats, we won.
No, I mean, definitely. But like you said, you got to earn trust. And, you know, we have guys who are rookies, obviously guys, you know, who are in their 12th, 13th year. And there's different levels for those guys. You know, I've seen Kevin Love make big shots, you know, doing it his way. You know, so the way that we, you know, treat those guys because of that earned respect and trust may be a little bit different. I've had guys who have been, you know, unbelievable defensive players. And at an end of game situation, you know, I may say, hey, you know, you're going to guard this guy this way. And, you know, that guy who I trust and who I've seen do it, you know, his way may say, hey, coach, you know, I think I can get it done if I do it this way. And in that moment, you got to trust those guys. But again, you got to earn that trust before we just give guys an opportunity to go out and do it their way.
Mel, I imagine it's the same for you. You trust some of your seniors versus some of your outstanding or freshmen rather, or vice versa.
Exactly. And just to echo kind of what JB was saying, it starts with development, right? So we really pay attention in the summer. Who's our one-on-one? Who's our playmakers? Who can get a basket? And you do that in your development. And you're watching like, okay, if game's on the line, once it gets to 5v5, I know the ball needs to be in this player's hand, because all summer, all practice on one-on-one drills, she's winning every drill. Or these players are getting the stops they need. And then you go 2-on-2, 3-on-3. So it's a buildup into the 5-on-5 scenario. So you're kind of breaking the whole into smaller parts. And I mean, we drill going, we beat the clock, 5 seconds to go. Who can get a full length shot off before 5 seconds? Then we lower it to 4, 3. We work on that. We work on the long pass if we don't have any timeouts and we can't advance the ball. We work on all different scenarios so that when you get to that situation, you already know as a coach, you're confident in what your players' abilities are and who can do what. You know who your drivers are, who are your shooters, who's your rebounders. You got to get some rebounders in there. So you kind of, you know, to young coaches out there, it starts from day one, just the development of the players. And then that gives you trust on who's going to do what in each scenario.
Yeah, I think on that, Mel, too, you think about something that's key for us is you got to find somebody who can throw the ball inbounds, you know, because that's not for everybody. You know, yeah. There's certain people who, you know, don't handle that pressure well. And then there's other people who do. You know, I know a guy who held on for a couple more years in his career on a good team for the simple fact that he could get the ball inbounds when they needed to. So that's something that, you know, a small thing, but, you know, if you don't have that trigger initially, you won't get an opportunity to get that shot off or run that play.
That's a great point from both of you, but it led me to think about, obviously there are people that are put in these situations, and players, again, people watching this are across all different levels and a lot of times younger, coaching younger players that fail in those scenarios. How do you handle that failure when they do fail? And maybe you don't trust them to put them in that situation. How do you communicate that, JB, to make sure that that player remains confident otherwise, but maybe this isn't the right spot for them in these situations?
Well, I think the most important thing is honesty. You know, from a young age, you know, coaching kids, we should be as truthful as we possibly can. But I think leading up to that, the relationship that you have with the kid allows you to be more honest and more truthful because they know where you're coming from. So I think sometimes we get caught up in just being coach, but we're more than just coach. You know, whatever the age range, sometimes we're big brother, sometimes we're father figure, sometimes we're mother figure or sister figure, whatever it may be, but we've got to develop that relationship. And if we develop a proper relationship, then I can tell you hard truths and you know they're coming from the right place. So, you know, I think that's the thing that we can't skip is make sure that we build relationships with our kids and our players and then be able to have those hard conversations and tell them the truth, you know, and it's not for everybody. You know, I got a guy in mind, I won't mention his name right now, but it got to the point where he knew it. And, you know, he would never go over there when it was time to throw the ball in bounds. But, you know, so they start to figure it out and they know themselves. And again, it's what's best for the team. And I think when you have guys that are bought in or girls that are bought into it, they're willing to do whatever it takes to help the team.
What's more, would you let yourself go? You feel the same way, like in terms of how you deal with players at the collegiate level, especially young players that may have been, they were it in high school and now they come into this situation in college and it's very different.
Yeah, I agree with JB. It's all about relationships and trust, and that players knowing because of your relationship and that built trust, they know you have their best interest at heart. So, and you got, they have to learn from it, right? We all fail. We all are successful because of our failures. And so you just got to be honest, have those honest conversations, and they got to learn from it and grow. And then, so when they're in that same scenario the next time, now they're coming out as winners or from the positive note. So I agree with JB. It's all about the relationships and then growing from our failures.
Are there, guys, any special situation executions that stand out to you and your, just in your experience, maybe not necessarily game winners, but do you have a hero moment where I drew that up, boy. I did that.
Mel, you got one?
I'm thinking, go ahead, JB. Okay.
No, I mean, I think there are, you know, there are a couple that stand out, you know, in my mind where, you know, it was jump ball in a game where we needed to get the possession going, coming out of overtime. We were down. We were playing against Portland when I was in Houston. And Corey Brewer hit a three-point shot to send us into overtime. So the momentum was going in our direction, but we knew that we needed a great start. You know, we won the jump ball to start overtime and we scored coming out of the overtime, and you could see the momentum had shifted and we went on to win that game. You know, and it was actually my first game that I took over in Houston against the Blazers. So that one sticks out in my mind and had special reasons, obviously more than just that one win.
Yeah, we were in I believe my first year as a head coach, and we were in a tournament down in Florida, and we played Florida, and the game was tied and drew up a slob, and one of our kids hit a three. And then, you know, then they called a timeout, but it was cool just to see it executed at a high level, and, you know, the bench went crazy, and just so proud of the players for listening and then executing the offense and making the shot, right? Right. We're as good as the players we coach. They make us look good.
Mel, slob is sideline out of bounds. Yes.
Yes. Sorry.
I haven't heard that term.
Sideline out of bounds.
I remember working UConn basketball camp when I was a player, and like with 8-year-olds, and we had to like drew up a game winner. I'm like, look at this, unbelievable! I was like so hyped up, like as a coach, because I'd never done it before. It's a unique feeling. I'd only been the player, But it's way different when you're lining them up and they go and they execute exactly what you want it. It's a cool feeling.
Real quick though, Dallin, we're talking about the offensive side of it. I can think of one where we escaped by the skin of our teeth because we failed to defend the other team, right? And they just happened to miss the shot. So what is it about? I mean, obviously, I imagine the same mechanics in terms of the detail that you would apply to the offensive side of the ball. But I would almost argue that the defensive side of the ball is more, if not at least as important, if not more important, Mel.
Yeah, for sure. And you need lock it down defenders. You got to make sure, because you know the offense is going to throw something at you. You got to know who the best players are, the rebounders, because a lot of times it's not the first shot that gets the second shot. It's that offensive putback. So definitely you want defense is just exactly. You got to make sure everybody's on the same page. They know the game plan. Are we switching everything? Are we switching 1 through 4? We're keeping our 5 home and then ultimately getting that stop. So we work on a lot of defensive scenarios as well, making sure everybody's locked in to what we're trying to do and ending up getting that stop to win the game.
Yeah. And you got to, the players that you put out there have to be prepared to make adjustments on the fly. You know, like Mel said, the offense is going to throw something tricky at you, right? They're not just going to, you know, pop one guy to the ball. You know, there's going to be some screens. There's going to be some slips. There's going to be, you know, on ball screens, off ball screens. So the guys that you put out there on the floor, they have to be able to adapt quickly. You know, guys are running full speed, guarding the greatest players on the planet. You know, so you're already on high alert and now that guy does something tricky, you know, how quickly does your brain fire where you can make the decision that you need to make to make sure that you don't make mistakes. So it's, you know, the defensive part is a little more pressure filled, I would say, than the offensive part, because the offensive part, you know, you get the ball, great player is going to, you know, make the play. The defense is, can you stop that? And that's what makes it more difficult, I would say.
Yeah, no doubt. In terms of, obviously, you guys have been coaching for a long time, and as you, like any job you're going to, especially coaching, you learn, you develop, maybe your philosophies change. So, Mel, have you, whether it be blobs and slobs with the ball in terms of things you want to execute, or if it's your 2-for-1 late game, or do you foul up 3? Like, how do you go about continuing to educate yourself and maybe evolve some of the ways you look at special situations or late game situations?
Yeah, I think you can't stop learning. So I still call my mentors and be like, and I watch a lot of film. So after this season, after the first 2 seasons here at Xavier, I watch almost every game. And then I study like my decision-making in it and then learn from it and grow. And then you call your mentors and be like, hey, what would you have done in this scenario? And then we watch NBA games, WNBA games. We watch the NCAA tournament. I think you can learn a lot as a coach just watching March Madness. All those games that come down the wire and our team's fouling, are they not? And then, you know, how's their success rate? So you got to just continue as coaches, no matter what level you're at, keep growing, keep learning, keep asking questions, because we, you know, you don't know everything. And so that's how I just continue to lean on other people and get people to critique me so that I can be the best that I can be.
Yeah, and I would add on there, too, is the analytics have changed the game also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have such an advantage now where everything, you know, is made into data and you can go and look at it. You know, you can look at, you know, how teams do when they're up 3 with 8 seconds to go when they decide to foul or not foul. And then you make a decision on whether or not you want to play the percentages. At the same time, you never want to lose focus on who you have on your team. Because some guys can do things better. You know, do you have a switchable team or do you have guys that need to stay with their own person? You know, so all those things, I think, for me have kind of changed depending on, you know, the time, the team that I was coaching. And again, like Mel said, you got to pay attention to other people. You know, one of the things that's fun for me is going through the draft process and watching all the college games. And then you get the opportunity to see what college coaches are doing. What kind of low clock baseline out of bounds versus a zone are they running? You know, so many scenarios come into play that you don't always have, you know, that they don't happen to you, but you have the opportunity to see them with others. And so you watch that and you can learn from that as well.
How do you guys, we've got this great question, one of our producers suggested, this is a really good question. How do you guys decide whether to use or hide? Like, We got this special situation play that we love, whether it's a defensive call or offensive call, but I'm gonna save it till we get to the thick of the season as opposed to earlier in the season. Or is it just, we need to win the opportunity that's in front of us? JB.
I'm win the opportunity. Games are so hard to win at our levels that, you know, when you have an opportunity to go win, you need to put your best stuff out there. What we kind of do is we put in about three or four plays early in the season. And then, you know, as we use them, we put it to the back. And then, you know, we'll have the next play that we need to use again on the baseline, on the sideline, you know, whatever it may be. We get the ball inbounds and there's 14 seconds on the clock. And now we're wasting time. We're trying to take the last shot. So we kind of have a playbook that we'll use. And, you know, because of scouting purposes and things like that, you know, if we use it, we'll put it on the back burner for a little bit and then use the next one and kind of catalog it that way.
Yeah, I agree with JB. Win, you need to win. So you there's no saving it. No. But I think as you get going, especially when you get into conference, people know you. They know everything about your players, what you're running. They know what special situations, if you've shown anything in earlier games. So I think you just try to critique it and maybe add new based on each scenario. I know we have some that we use. We'll use them in Big East play, but then we'll also put some new stuff in at the end of the year based on just scenarios and maybe our players are in a better place by then or just things like that. So always just adapting and changing, but right, we don't save it. We need that dub.
Mel, you made me think of something though, because I mean, obviously within your staff, like whoever's doing the scout for that game, like they've got to know that team intimately. And in league play, you usually do, but there's some things like up the sleeve. How far back do you guys go in scouting your conference opponents so that you know them, but you may know what they pull out from non-conference? How do you handle that process?
Yeah, so our assistants do a great job. They watch a lot of film. They'll watch, at least 7 league games and then go back any close games. And, I have our video coordinator will get me any like last 2 minutes in close games for our opponent. So we'll make sure we watch that, or the assistant coach that's responsible and the scout watches that. So we kind of know too, what they're doing, what's their game plan, who they trying to get the ball to, scenarios like that. So you're always looking for ways where you can maybe get an edge in scouting. And so we make sure our video coordinator has us organized with all that.
Yeah, we in the past have had a catalog of all the coaches in the league, and we just throw their in-the-game and special situation plays in that catalog. So we start to learn and we can study what they're doing. And even if they take a new job, you know, we know where they are and the things that they've liked to run in the past. All of us, and, Coach, I know you're the same, and I hate to tell it, but we all have tells. Some of us like the hammer screens. Some of us like flare screens. We all have our tell. The more and more you watch, you may not know the exact play, but I know Mel likes to run this hammer. So coming out of this timeout, we better be alert for this hammer, those are things that we try to pay attention to. And then, like a good poker player, we try to hide our tells as much as we can, too.
The offensive man is just always at the advantage, though. I mean, even sometimes, especially at your level, JB, like the defense could be flawless, but you just got elite offensive performers.
Yeah, these guys are so good. I mean, you think of, this guy is 7 feet tall. He can handle it. He can do, he can shoot it from three. He can, it's like advantage him. And that's the way that, the league is set up. It's been changed over time where it's an offensive players league. You take a lot of the physicality out, the hand checking, the cutting, chucking of cutters, the freedom of movement rules they put in. Like, they want the offense to score. And these guys, like you said, are elite. You could go down the list of guys and, one-on-one, when you get to some of those high level players, as good as you are defensively, you're at their mercy. And a lot of times it's contested and just hope they miss. But guys are averaging 30 plus for a reason.
Mel, let me ask you something about this, because this is one of my college hoops pet peeves. Obviously, I covered the game, I played the game. That's the game I'm closest to. Guys are not James Harden. They are not, they're not Kyrie, but they think they are at times. Like late game, I know coaches aren't drawn up. You dribble it for 20 seconds at the top of the key. and you're just going to go one-on-one. That's not what Izzo just said, but that's what they're doing anyway. So when players, how do you manage? Like, we want you to look at the greatest players in the world. We want you to try to work on your game, but there's certain things that players, just, you can't necessarily do that. How do you manage that? You're not quite at that level, but you need to work with other people to execute at the end of games, I guess, for particularly end game situations.
It goes back to those relationships, right? So you got to make sure you're having those honest conversations. And I say, hey, you want that shot? Show me, prove me you can do it. Get in the gym, get up 1,000 makes a day, get up 500. So now that trust factor comes in that I'm ready. But yeah, everybody's got the step back now, right? Everybody thinks they're Curry. Once they cross half court, the shot's going up. But you just got to, it's relationships, have those honest conversations, and they got to show you. They got to show me in practice that you can do it. And then we'll make sure we put you in those scenarios when the lights are on.
That makes me think of your alma mater at Georgetown when Pat Ewing had that clip. When he asked that kid about, I've never seen you take that shot before.
I literally retweeted that on my timeline yesterday. Somebody was like, I'm posting this just cause. And I was like, this was a great moment.
Right. And it's like, that's it. It's like, I've never seen you do that before. And you're going to try it tonight.
Yeah, it's a it's an epidemic, especially in the men's game. It's an epidemic in men's college hoops where dudes just go off on their own. And usually it doesn't work 99% of the time. It doesn't work. Mon, you have any other questions before we get to eCoach? All right. So, folks, in case you don't know, eCoach is a great resource online. A lot of NBA coaches breaking down drills, workouts, plays. In this clip, we're going to show you Coach Bickerstaff giving you a little zigzag defensive drill. Check it out.
This is JB Bickerstaff with NBA Coaches and eCoach, and we'll be working on individual defense and defensive slide technique. The most important part of defense is understanding how to be in a stance so that you can always contain the ball. Again, this is a drill we use as a warm-up drill or on days that we want to take it light, but we want to pay attention to technique. All right, coach is going to get into a defensive stance. When he gets into his defensive stance, for the sake of this drill, I want him to put his hands behind his back. You see his posture is great. His feet are a little bit more than shoulder width apart. His chest is up. His head is up so that he can see the offensive player's chest. He's not looking at his feet. He's not looking at the ball, all right? On my go, coach is gonna take a slide to his left. As he slides left, that left foot is gonna become his pointer foot, okay? The feet stay a little bit more than shoulder width apart. They never come together. We're working lane line to lane line. As he turns to go to his right foot as his lead foot, his right foot now becomes his pointer foot. Again, posture's good, feet are shoulder width apart. We're not clicking our heels. Go ahead, next up. If we do slide and bring it, if we do click our heels, that's how offensive players get advantages. That's how they're able to change direction, and we're not able to change direction. Okay, again, balance, right? Shoulder up, posture is perfect. Okay, change of direction, change the footwork. Again, you see coaches' feet never come together, giving themselves an opportunity to defend, right? And change directions. It's important as a defender to try to keep one foot on the ground as much as we can so we're always in position and prepared to change direction. This time coming back, we're gonna let the coaches activate their hands. Okay, so now feet are still a little bit more than shoulder width apart. Coach is in perfect position. Wingspan is key. Again, a lot of the of being a great defender is the illusion of taking up space. So now we're going to our left again. As we go, our hands become active. I've got this hand in, I'm using this hand in the passing lane, okay? We change direction, our feet and our hands change now. Okay, we're in our stance. Again, we're active on the ball. Keep those feet apart. Don't bring our feet together. Stay in our stance, right? The illusion of length, the opportunity to contain the ball. Good, 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 here we go. Last one through, okay, we're gonna do the same thing, but we're gonna pick the pace up a little bit. So now, in your mind, this is Russell Westbrook in front of you, this is Mike Conley in front of you. What do you have to do to keep him in front of you at more of a game speed? So our reps are gonna pick up, but the technique should never change. Ready, here we go, right? Faster, faster. Good. Keep those feet apart. Next up. Keep those feet apart. Good. Good. Technique is key. Good. Good. That's perfect. So this is, again, the primary thing as defenders is you want to keep the ball in front of you as best you can. Poor technique leads to mistakes, leads to offensive opportunities. That's what we're trying to limit as one-on-one defenders.
Great stuff, Coach Bickerstaff. We started talking about details, and that is the basics of defense. Anything else you want to add to that? And Coach Moore, feel free to pile on after.
No, I mean, it goes back into the layers, right? The small things are the most important. The fundamentals are the most important. You know, you look at all these great players, and sometimes we forget that they know how to pivot. We forget that they know how to slide their feet. We forget that they know how to throw a chest pass, right? But all their games start with the fundamentals. That defensive clip, you know, is key to that. It's being simple. It's containing the ball. And we were talking about these great players. You can't afford to make mistakes versus the great players. So your fundamentals and your technique has to be sound and make them take advantage.
I agree with JB. You're never too old to work on fundamentals. Yeah. So, you know, no matter what level you're at in that small thing, like, I like that, JB. I'm like, my wheels are turning. The girl's going to be back soon. We got to do a little bit of defensive stance.
Hey, don't get your girls mad at me.
It's so funny. When that video came up, I was like, ooh, I don't miss this.
I was laughing. Those coaches were on my staff, and it was an early morning in Las Vegas. And I know they were like, oh, we're doing defensive slides this early in the morning.
Yeah, we all have the nightmares of that stuff. Coaches, we really appreciate your time. This was great, very insightful and fun. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
We want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach video library to give our listeners an insider's perspective on how NBA coaches teach the game. For more information and to access the library of more than 400 videos, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. For more, go to JuniorNBA.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.